One and two and three and four and five. Report of interview with Rear Admiral K.F. Adams, Royal Canadian Navy, retired at Sydney, British Columbia, on 17th of October, 1983. Well, sir, thank you for having me here today. I was out and had tea with you and Mrs. Adams yesterday, and the last time I saw you before that was 29 years ago, when you were Flag Officer, Naval Divisions, and I was driving the 11th Escort Squadron, and we were up training your reserves. So, as we've just talked over, my first questions are, when did you join the Navy, and why?
Well, I joined the Navy, I suppose, the Royal Naval College of Canada in 1919. And I was age 15. And the Naval College got blown up in Halifax and moved to Esquimalt. Well, that brought it very close to our attention, and I wanted to go. I just liked the idea of being a sailor. And at 15, I didn't have very many important ideas, so that was the decision. So I went to the Naval College for 3 years, graduated in 1922, when the great axe fell, and it didn't take any of my term into the Navy at all. So I had to look once again.
Yeah. Well, before we go on to that, you joined from Victoria, did you? You were born in Victoria, I think.
Born in Victoria, and spent all.
Lived night. Along the Gorge Road there.
Well, I was born on the Gorge Road, but we lived in Oak Bay.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
And so you joined from here at age 15?
Yes.
Entrance exams, I suppose?
Yes, there were competitive exams all the way across Canada.
Yeah.
I've forgotten how many applied, but the 22 were accepted.
Probably 100 or so applied, would you say?
I would imagine.
About that?
I don't think I ever did hear that figure.
No. There were a lot, I know.
Yeah, it was a very popular thing to do.
It was, eh? It was popular.
Yes.
It's not so popular today, so that's interesting.
Yes. I think it's probably more popular today in actual numbers than it was those days, but numbers were smaller.
Yes, yeah. So, there you are. Who were your term mates?
Fellows that came back in the new war and served all during the war, fellow term mates of mine were J.R. Mitchell from Halifax, J.R. Kidston from Kelowna, who commanded the Wetaskiwin, and he was my term, and Tommy Taylor, TMC Taylor, from Kelowna, graduated from UBC in botany. He came in as a personal advisor, personnel man. R.E. Mary served with me when I was director of warfare and training in Ottawa.
Is that M-A-R-Y?
M-E-R-R-Y.
M-E-R-R-Y, yeah, Mary.
He was a director of the soap people.
The soap?
Lever Brothers.
Lever Brothers, yeah.
He was a director there, and he came into the Navy as a 2.5 striper and became what we called Fleet Equipment Coordinating Authority, which was a scheme we had to keep all our ships up to date and recordings up to date of what equipment they had, mm-hmm. which was a great help to us.
Oh, yes. So those, yes.
I think that's about the limit.
Yeah.
Alan Jekyll from the Yukon.
J-E-C-K...
J-E-C-K-E-L-L.
E-L-L, yeah.
He came in and as a technical officer, and they sent him to sea with me in the Assiniboine. So I had an old classmate as an advisor, so he worked as staff officer.
Seems to me you were the only one that went to sea in command anyway, of your term.
Yes. Well, no, apart from Kids, he was in command of Wetaskiwin.
Oh, Wetaskiwin, of course. I forgot Kids.
Yes.
So,
I think that was all of it ended up in the Navy.
Who was previous to you that you that stayed in that we that I might know?
Oh, well, Harry DeWolf.
Oh.
Nelson Ray.
Nelson Ray at the same time.
Willie Portis. Knowlton. They were all permanent officers from the term before, but they didn't suffer this great axe at graduation. And they went on and became midshipmen in the Royal Navy.
What do you remember of them from those years?
Oh, they were great competitors.
Yes.
You know, on the football field.
Yes, they were all good athletes.
Strict disciplinarians.
Yeah.
And altogether, everybody that came out of the Naval College was a pretty good fellow.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. You were all pretty good athletes. You were a bit of an athlete yourself. What did you play mostly?
Well, my game at which I played best probably was rugby. We had great rugby teams at the college. I think I was probably the eldest on the team, and we were playing in the senior league when I was only 17 and a half.
Were you really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, many years later, when they were captains, I suppose, I was playing for St. Mary's, and I played rugger against Knowlton and Porteous. I weighed 152 pounds, and I used to hate to tackle them. I always got them around the bootstraps if I could.
Yeah. Willie Porteous was a great danger when he was playing. End off half.
Yeah, I remember them. Arnott used to play. He was a petty officer, PNRT. Jim Arnott. I'm skipping ahead, but I've often heard that Willie, I've never seen him do it, Willie Porteous used to eat port glasses, or chew them anyway.
Well, I've seen him do that once, not twice.
Perhaps answers it, yeah.
Yes, I think it was a trick.
These stories lose nothing in the telling, do they? The way the story went the last time I heard it, about 30 or 5 years ago, was he used to eat them regularly. I somehow doubted that, and now I know.
No, I've heard this story, and I remember being with him when he took a bite out of a glass once.
Yeah.
But he was a pretty solid material.
Yeah. So, anyway, the axe had fallen, and you had to look for a job at age what? Graduate from Naval College?
18.
Uh-huh.
18 when I got kicked out. And I ended up determined to be a sailor. My father was very keen that I should go into business with him and follow in his footsteps, but I was determined to be a sailor. So I went, first job with the Pacific Salvage Company, where we sent down a ship from Victoria down to Mexico to salvage a ship off the beach at Mazatlan.
How do you spell that?
Mazatlan.
M-A-Z-A-T-E-L-A-N. T-E-L-A-N, yeah.
And after 50 days, we got this ship off, but we worked enormous long hours, overtime and everything. And eventually we towed her up to San Diego and then came on back to Victoria. That was my first seagoing job. I was a quartermaster.
Yeah.
And 2 hours on, six off at sea. And then we joined the gang of working sailors during the salvage operations. And we put in long hours into overtime.
A second, I'll see. So that was your first voyage?
Yeah.
And you stayed in salvage tugs?
Well, no, I went to the, after the salvage company, I went to the Imperial Oil Company, where I was fourth officer of a large tanker. And then I worked up to second officer. I was still pretty young. I was only 20, I suppose.
You have a mate's ticket?
Yes, I had the necessary paper.
Yeah.
Which we got, the shipping master here was a great friend of ours, and it helped a lot.
Yes.
We ran down to South America, Antofagasta in Chile, and then pick up the oil in Peru, take it up through the Panama Canal up to Charleston, South Carolina,
yeah.
And so on. I did that for a time. And I suddenly realized that I wasn't making any, getting anywhere.
Yeah.
It was not progressive. The pay was extremely small. I was getting $110 a month.
As a mate.
As a mate. And, of course, that was all found, but it wasn't very much money. So an engineer, who was an Englishman who was serving in the same ship, he and I decided that we'd come out and buy a tugboat in Vancouver and cast our... try it out, see what we could do.
Yeah.
So we were very fortunate. We got all kinds of work in Vancouver Harbor with this little tug. We made enough money to make a fish boat, build a fish boat, which we did, and sent her off to work in the fishing industry. Well, I went to work for the Vancouver Tugboat Company and commanded one of their tugs for a couple of years then.
Mm-hmm.
But one day I went down to call on the Navy, and I'm not sure that they didn't place pretty good value on the fact that I was a rugby player. And they insisted that I should join the reserve and come and do some training in the rugby season, which I did. And after a few months of during the season, the commanding officer, was Percy Nellis, said to me, "Did I ever think of transferring back to the regular force?" And I said, "Well, it's what I wanted to do all my life." So he forwarded the letter to Ottawa seeking approval, and I was taken back with seniority dating 3rd of January 1928 as a lieutenant.
This was in the year 1928 then, was it, when Nellis approached you?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed here in Esquimalt until summer was over. And in September, I went off to do courses in England.
Yeah.
Went to the Royal Naval College of Greenwich, and followed by technical courses in Portsmouth. And then that period was followed by 2 years in Mediterranean Fleet with the HMS Calypso.
Calypso, yeah.
Calypso was cruiser, or part of the 3rd Cruiser Squadron. And it was a big fleet in Mediterranean in those days. There were 4 battleships and 2 aircraft carriers. Total of 55 ships altogether formed the Mediterranean Fleet. And it was a great school. We played hard and we worked hard, and it was a fine life.
What RN officers did you meet during those years that history might have recorded since?
Well, the first lieutenant commander of Calypso was this my memory.
That's all right. It's Calypso, what year? 1930?
Yeah, Calypso, 1930. He became a full admiral, I think.
Did he?
And the gunnery officer became a, I'm not sure, I think he was a full admiral. And I think we had three admirals come out of that ship.
Did you?
She was a good ship.
Yeah. Well, the names might pop up later. They usually do.
Oh, yes. They certainly will.
So, there you are in Calypso. What else happened during your time in the Mid-Fleet?
Well, we did a lot of exercises. Cruised the Mediterranean from Gibraltar to Port Said, Greek islands, Italy and so on, a lot of flag waving.
Yeah.
But we also did a lot of many extraordinary exercises.
Such as?
Oh, surface exercises, you know, doing a cruiser's normal work.
Yeah, the usual towing, I suppose,
yes,
and things like that.
Yes, to all those drills.
Yeah.
We became very proficient, a lot of boat work. Endless amount of boat work.
Yes.
And it was all very good. We took part in athletics. Boat pulling was a big thing there. We and the first small ship to have won the Warspite Trophy, which is a little sailor standing with his sword on. Royal Sovereign Trophy is called.
Yeah.
We're given by the battleship for the Royal Sovereign. And we raced for that, the officers' gigs. And we were the first small ship in the Navy to have won it.
In Calypso.
In Calypso, mm. Then I won the fleet sailing race. There were 55 boats started in the race, and I came in first by a mile.
That's good. What were you sailing?
A whaler.
Your boat's outside the window now.
I have the little cup over there.
You got the cup over there?
Yeah. No, not the cup. The cup itself is a thing called the Trieste cup.
Trieste?
Trieste.
T-R-I-E-S-T-E.
Yes.
Yeah.
Given by the people of British people of Trieste to a British naval squadron.
Yeah.
Based in Malta.
Now, what I was referring to is at the marina outside, your boat is, the green one is tied up. Your boat here.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Has Mrs. Adams got a boat too, did you tell me yesterday?
No.
No, just the one.
Yeah.
I got it wrong. Well, after Calypso, what?
Well, after Calypso, I went back to England in the battleship, the Marlborough.
Marlborough, yeah.
Marlborough, which was coming to the end of her tether. And then I was appointed as navigator of the Skeena, newly brand new boat built for us at Southampton. And so I joined there and got ready to sail her from there across the Atlantic. We were the first pair of destroyers, Skeena and Saguenay, to cross the Atlantic without getting fuel.
Without fueling, yeah.
Yes.
What were you in Skeena?
Lieutenant.
But first lieutenant?
No. I was the navigator.
Navigator, sorry, yeah.
There were four officers ship senior to me. There was the captain, B.G. Broder, the chief engineer, Stevens, Commander Stevens, later Rear Admiral, Frankie Houghton, Lieutenant Commander, Nelson Lay, who was a lieutenant but senior to me.
Yeah.
And then I came along. But she was a very good ship.
Who were the subs?
Don't think we had any
other officers,
subs. We didn't train subs much.
Now they'd still be in the RN, of course, yes. Unless they. Yeah. So you brought Skeena where?
Out to Halifax, where we stayed for a few days, and then shoved off for the West Coast.
So you were in the original Skeena that came into Esquimalt.
Yeah.
In what year?
1931.
What do you remember of Brodeur?
Oh,
Brodeur.
He was a delightful gentleman, but very severe in his discipline, and he needed sea time.
Yeah. For promotion.
Yes, the unfortunate part of the those officers is there weren't enough ships to go around.
Mm.
And very difficult to get her good experience.
Yeah.
But altogether, it was an experience to serve with Brodeur.
How did he get the nickname Scotty?
Oh, the sailors gave him that. He had a slight accent. And out here, we don't see that number of French Canadians. And the sailors just called him Scotty for some reason.
Yeah.
And that was all lower deck.
Yeah. What do you remember of Nelson Lay?
Oh, fine officer. Well trained. And very able. Yeah.
What was his nickname? Cod's Head is one.
Cod's Head, right, that's right. Remember the that inquiry we were having on the quarter deck. Brodeur was conducting it, and one chief petty officer was giving evidence about the loss of a piece of equipment on the forecastle during an anchor time, and he said that he warned the fellow not to lose that piece of equipment over the side, and he said, "Mr. Codshead worried him, told him to." Brodeur said, "Who?" And he said, "Mr. Lay, sir."
Yeah.
Slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
That came about as a result of a song which was started in the lower deck about all the officers and old Uncle Codshead and all.
Oh, yeah, like Uncle Tom Cobbley and all. And an old Uncle Codshead and all.
My nickname was Daisy. Spanner Stevens.
Spanner Stevens, because he was a plumber.
Yes.
But why Daisy?
Oh, all Daisy, all Adams is a...
Daisy Adams?
Daisy Adams.
Oh, yes. Like Dusty Rhodes and so on.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Dusty Miller.
Dusty Miller, yeah.
Yeah. There are not that many Adamses.
No. I didn't know that one before.
Yeah.
Lay was also called Traitor Lay.
Well, he ran the canteen very capably.
Oh.
Too. And I think that the ship's company gave him the name of Traitor Lay.
Yeah.
Since he was a good merchandiser.
Yeah. Where did you go in Skeena and what did you do?
We worked this coast over. We waved the flag from one end to the other, and visited most ports, and it gave me an opportunity to show how well I knew the coast.
Yeah, lovely for you.
And later in the Skeena, after Brodeur left, G.C. Jones took command, and he immediately gave me the nickname of the CPR Skipper.
CPR Skipper?
Yes, he called me the CPR Skipper. because of my local knowledge on this coast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a thing that that you must have is experience on this coast because of the tidal effects and everything. You're designed to run that course, you're way off with the tidal effects, so you've got to fix it at the time. And not that studious navigators aren't very good on the coast, they are. But I could do it without charts. And
yes, I guess you could from your...
Yeah. Yeah.
The I know from previous interviews that the appearance of the ships was always impeccable, but it seemed to some from the lower deck that there wasn't that much training went on, that there was an unusual amount of time spent on painting and polishing. And
yes, what? This is true.
You think it's true?
Yeah. Of course, we didn't have ships to train with, and we didn't have any operational plans or anything.
No. What other ships were out here?
The Vancouver.
The just only?
Only. Mm. And she was replaced by Saint-Laurent.
Yeah. Well, what about Skeena time? Anything else about Skeena time?
No, I did my full 2 years there and was appointed to England in 1933. So quickly got married and went over to England.
Edwina, who has just left us.
Rowena.
The Rowena, rather. Yeah, Rowena.
Yeah. Yes.
We seem to be the generation that hangs on to our wives.
Yeah, well, we had our 50th anniversary the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite a long time.
So you married Rowena and you went to the UK. Did she go?
Yes, yes, she did. I went to Pitt Street to become a physical training instructor or a PT officer. But there they sold me short. I broke my ankle very soon after I arrived, and that kind of put me out of doing any physical work, although I could do all the book work. But I dropped out of the class I was with, and which was a bunch of petty officers. So instead of doing the course fully with them, I dropped out and I just loafed around the gymnasium doing what I could and studying what there was to study and so on, and suddenly I was appointed away without any being properly qualified. Mm. I never felt that I was a PT officer as such, and I was sent off to be PT officer of the Home Fleet Destroyer Command, which was 27 destroyers and one cruiser. And I was on the staff of Commodore D for the Home Fleet Destroyers.
Yeah.
And I had to organize all the sports and the games and the physical training for 27 destroyers. Mm-hmm. It shook me a bit.
Yeah, a bit.
But,
what ship were you in?
Cairo. Mm-hmm. HMS Cairo.
Who what do you remember of the Home Fleet in those days? Was CNC?
CNC was Kelly.
Yeah.
John Kelly.
Yeah.
One of the famous brothers. And we had great success in the Calypso. No, not the Calypso, the Cairo.
Cairo.
Because of Scapa Flow at the... We won everything. We won the Rodman Cup.
Rodman, R-O-D-M-A-N.
Yes. Rodman Cup was for cutters 2 miles. The cutters were seamen. We had a very well-trained crew.
Yeah.
We won the officers, cruisers, officers pulling race.
Yeah.
And, well, we cleaned up on everything.
That's good.
And I had congratulatory letters, signals from all over the place.
Yeah. Any officers there that history now knows?
Not in Cuts, not well, in Cairo.
Well, in the home fleet, apart from Kelly.
Oh, yes, there were a lot of good officers. It was so, so large.
Who?
It was so large.
Yeah, it was so large, yes.
Yeah, there were so many people. Oh. Yeah, they were very efficient, very capable. Of course, the whole RN is something to be admired.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think everybody agrees on that.
Yeah.
Again, coming back to preparations for war, was there much exercising apart from towing, shoots and so on?
This was too early for that. That was 4 years before.
Yeah,
any
33, yeah. Nothing.
But there was always that complete confidence of gunnery and so on, and torpedoes and because they exercised sufficiently to keep everything on their, everybody on their toes.
How long were you in Cairo?
About just under 2 years.
Uh-huh. And then you went?
And then Cairo. See here. Oh, yes, I came across the Atlantic. My wife came home.
Yeah.
By the Panama Canal.
Yeah.
In a Danish ship, which cost me $9 a day.
What?
Beautiful accommodation. $9 a day. Unbelievable. And I came across in the Cunard White Star to Halifax, and was appointed in Halifax to take, specifically to take the RMC cadets who showed sympathy for the Navy.
Ah, yes.
And take them through their summertime course. This class consisted of Bill Landymore and a lot of people, two or three of whom I learned, including Bill Landymore, who went into the Navy permanently. And
what do you remember of Landymore as a cadet?
Oh, he was like all the rest of the RMC cadets, typical cadets, smart, and very trustworthy. I had minimum of worry about them. They had been extraordinarily well trained at RMC, and they didn't cause us any alarm.
No, I'm sure they wouldn't. And when they went back to RMC, you did what?
Well, they finished in RMC, and then they came into the Navy.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And we sent to overseas.
So after their summer course, then?
Yes.
What,
they went back to RMC.
And what did you do then?
Oh, I went as first lieutenant of the Champlain, sister ship of the Vancouver.
Yeah. Who was driving Champlain?
Who's Captain Roger Bidwell?
Ah. Fanny Bidwell.
Yeah, Roger Bidwell.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed him. I liked him.
When you were my flag officer up in the Great Lakes, he was my flag officer on the Atlantic coast.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I was very fond of him.
Yeah.
But he wasn't an easy man to please.
Oh, no.
Well, of course, neither were you. But I don't know why I say that as though it was unusual. None of you were easy to please.
I think that the most distinct memory I have in Champlain was the ship was getting pretty ancient, and we were constantly fighting rust.
Mm.
And It happened down in the ERA's mess. We found that behind the wooden paneling there was a lot of rust, so I said we stripped the paneling, we moved the chief petty officers of the ERAs to another section of the ship, and we started to clean out that rust in behind the on the ship side and behind the paneling. And one of the sailors used a chipping hammer and he suddenly stopped and he came up and reported that he'd thought he'd nearly gone through the ship's side, and it went out in a little balloon and it's very high tensile steel, so it stretched rather than break. So we called in the dockyard to put a measure on it to find out the thickness that ship side was, and we found it was 9/1000ths of good steel left, and we were about to sail for the West Indies. So we just put the paddles back and said nothing. But I noticed that our gunner went down and took out $20,000 worth of insurance.
Who's the gunner?
Freeman.
Oh, yeah.
Gunner Freeman.
Yeah. He was Gunner T, wasn't he?
Gunner T, yes.
Yeah, I remember him. He taught me the Whitehead.
Yeah.
Torpedo.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And in the West Indies, what happened?
Oh, the West Indies was the usual thing. We met up with the cruisers of the
American and West Indies squadron.
We exercised with them in very largely doing cruiser work. You know, nobody ever thought that we'd ever have to go and look for a submarine.
No.
And no anti-submarine exercise at all. No submarines to exercise with, of course.
That's when you first saw Bermuda, I suppose.
Yes, that would be about the first time.
Because later you started Summer's Isles.
Yes.
In Bermuda, huh?
I got to know Bermuda pretty well before then. See, I'd been in 1941. I took command of Prince David.
Yes.
Which worked for was allocated to Commander in Chief American West Indies in Bermuda.
Yeah.
So I'd get 4 days in Bermuda every 21 days at sea.
Yeah. And you went back to Halifax after that winter cruise, I guess.
No, we turned around. Yeah, that's right, back to Halifax in Champlain. Yeah.
In Champlain you were now.
When we got back, I think it was about this time that I was pulled out of Champlain and sent to England to pick up Saint-Laurent.
Oh.
The first tender of Saint-Laurent. Yeah. Saint-Laurent and Fraser were taking over Chatham Dockyard.
I was born in the Royal Engineer Barracks in Chatham, so I know Chatham Dockyard, yeah. It was seeing, I'm like Chilly Manfield, I first saw my first warship when I was, could have been 4, 5, 6 in Chatham Dockyard. HMS Hood was the name of the ship I remember first. You've just brought me two pictures of the gate of Chatham Barracks and the wardroom. It says HMCS Pembroke, P-E-M-B-R-O-K-E, Chatham Barracks. Well, I remember wandering around those when I was just a boy. Well, where are we? You're back here. Are you in the UK again? I've forgotten where we were.
Yeah, I went to the UK to join.
Yes, you picked
Saint-Laurent.
Up Saint-Laurent, yeah.
And we steamed after we got them semi-refit, self-refit. We steamed them across the Atlantic in company with Fraser.
Yeah.
Fraser was a sister ship.
Yeah.
and got into Halifax, where we stayed a few days, and then Sally took off, bound for the West Coast again.
Yes.
And we went down south through the canal and up the other side.
And who was driving her?
Broder.
Broder again?
Again.
You need, what do you do, need more sea time?
It was, I was not only the first lieutenant, but I was one of the very few officers who'd done an anti-submarine course with, as the equipment.
Where did you do that?
In Devonport.
This must have been in 1937 then, you know, when you commissioned
Devonport, when I went to the Saint Laurent, and it took a couple of weeks off and went down to this course.
Yeah.
And then went to Saint Laurent.
Yeah, so you were one of the first officers trained in ASDIC in the Royal Canadian Navy.
Just a smattering.
Yes, but most didn't have a smattering.
That's right. We had two specialists in the Navy, neither of whom were used at all in any submarine work.
Who were they?
Pressey and...
Yeah, Pressey.
And Wood.
Hard to starboard, Pressey and Wood. Yeah. Wood was RN, wasn't he?
Morris Wood, no.
No, he wasn't. He Morris
two
Wood.
Two brothers.
Yeah.
One was Captain Wood, who became Director of Naval Ordnance.
That's Captain Wood, yeah.
And the other one was Fat Wood, we called him.
Fat, yeah.
Yeah, his nickname, but his proper name was Morris. Morris Wood, who eventually came out here to live and died up on by the golf club.
What kind of training do they have, do you know, Pressey and Wood? Like a month, 2 months, 3 months?
Oh, it was longer than that.
A year?
7, 8 months.
Ah, yes, good.
If not 9.
Yeah.
But the equipment was going through changes pretty rapidly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it wasn't viewed upon as being very important.
It wasn't viewed as important.
No, nothing like gunnery.
No.
When people were so wrong.
Yes.
Proven by Walker of the Stork.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the finest anti-submarine, well, the finest submarine man during the war.
Johnny Walker, yeah. So you're in Saint Laurent, and you came, and you're back in Canada with Broder in command.
Yeah. Then we came around to the West Coast.
Yeah. And
no, we stayed. I've not got this right. We stayed in Halifax with Saint Laurent, and the Fraser came around.
Yeah, I see.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then the next spring cruise, Broder in command of 6 destroyers, we eventually all circulated around, and we eventually all ended up in Vancouver, all 6 destroyers.
What, Saint Laurent,
Fraser. Saguenay and Skeena.
Saguenay and Skeena. Champlain must have still been going.
No, they were. Not sure.
Well,
we took on 2 more.
Yeah.
Restigouche.
Well, the researchers can check it for us. This is the sort of thing I mean. We don't have to remember everything.
Yeah.
And so, what about...
They all stayed here.
Yeah.
Well, then it was decided that Fraser, Saint-Laurent and Fraser were the same class.
Yes.
They wanted to keep these 2 ships together.
Yes.
They wanted to keep Saguenay and Skeena on the other coast. So we exchanged ships' companies.
Mm-hmm.
But only the first lieutenants being left. So I, for a few minutes, was... solitary member of the crew
of the Sally.
Sally, until my crew from the Skeena arrived and put over their West Coast crew.
Well, we're getting close to war now. It's 30.
Yes, we got scared of war. And listened to Hitler talking and so on. And we were sent away up to a lonely spot of the West Coast to prepare for war, which meant doing a lot of things that the manual said you have to do before you go to war.
Yeah, like what?
And, well, lashing down all the rings of spray and bust and headless. And we suddenly got serious about it and paid less attention to frills and brass polish.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time I'd reached my 2 years in Sally. So I was sent in August 1939 to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Appointed in command of the Venture.
Oh, yes.
And I was to stop off in Ottawa and see them in Ottawa before I went through. And Nellis told me that we were going to keep the sailboat, the Venture, and use her for kind of a Q-boat operation.
Oh.
And then on my way out of his office, Captain Murray, got him, the Chief of Staff, got hold of me and said, "Now you're going as First Lieutenant of Stadacona." And so I had two advisors from the top places. So Murray won out, I guess. I ended up as the executive officer of Stadacona.
This Cuba bit is interesting. Did he enlarge upon it at all?
No. It's just, he stuck his neck out to get this.
To get Venture.
Venture.
Mm.
And I think he was trying to justify it. There's no need to worry about it.
No. Well, so he went to Stadacona.
Yeah. Where I stayed during the most difficult time, short of sleep all the time. People passing through there, sending them to sea, remanned ships.